Greetings and welcome to the Recombobulation Area podcast. My name is Dan Schaefer and I'm the founder of the Recombobulation Area. Thank you so much for joining us. In less than a week in Wisconsin, voters will head to the polls for the August partisan primary. Statewide, voters will decide on a pair of proposed amendments to the state constitution. If you want to learn more about those, head over to our site and check out the latest from Marquette University professor Phil Rocco. But that's not the only thing voters will be deciding on next week. With new state legislative maps, there are more contested primaries in Senate and Assembly districts than there have been in more than a decade. There are also a number of primaries happening in congressional races. Perhaps the most interesting of those primaries is the one happening in the 3rd Congressional District, where Democrats are looking to win back a seat now represented by Republican Derek Van Orden. The three candidates running are Rebecca Cook, Katrina Shankland, and Eric Wilson. Cook and Shankland are the top two contenders in this primary, and the race has gotten a little spicy as we get close to primary election day. Joining us to talk about this race is Anthony Trigoski, political science professor at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse. Anthony, welcome to the Recombobulation Area, and thank you for joining us.
Well, thanks, Dan. I am a big fan of your work. And as someone who has never been to the Milwaukee airport, following your website has been a very educational experience for me.
Well, someday you'll have to get down there and recombobulate in person for yourself and get the full experience. You know, it's there's nothing like it, literally nothing like it. Because it's the only recombobulation area in the world.
Yeah. I need a lot of recombobulating after going through the TSA checkpoint. That's a certainty.
It's a discombobulating process, and we're living in discombobulating times here in Wisconsin. And just the political environment for this summer has been pretty wild. The 3rd Congressional District, as we're talking today, so we're recording this on Wednesday morning, and I think this afternoon, Kamala Harris will be holding a rally with Tim Walz and Bon Iver in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. So Eau Claire is part of the 3rd Congressional District. You are in La Crosse, also part of the 3rd Congressional District. The primary here is an interesting one. So why don't we first, before we get into some of the details here, let's just take a big picture, 30,000 foot view of this primary. So where do things stand now and what's happening here?
Sure, Dan. So we've got a 3-person race, as you mentioned, to take on Derek Van Orden, the Republican incumbent, in November. And the three candidates are Eric Wilson, who has raised the least amount of money out of a 3-person field. He's running as more of the progressive candidate, I would say, in line with like the Bernie Sanders wing of the Democratic Party. And then aside from Wilson, we have Rebecca Cook, who ran in the 2022 Democratic primary. She finished 2nd to Brad Paff, who became the Democratic standard bearer in this district in 2022. And then he went on to lose narrowly to Derek Van Orden in the November election. And then finally, we have Katrina Shankland, who is a member of the state assembly, the Stevens Point area. And if we look at kind of how the race is trending, we know that Rebecca Cook has raised the most money. Shankland is 2nd. Wilson is 3rd. Unclear where the race sits other than that, because there isn't really going to be any public polling in a House of Representatives primary election. So that's kind of the lay of the land. And there's a lot of anticipation on the Democratic Party side for this primary election, because Democrats are very enthusiastic about the prospect of taking on and potentially defeating Derek Van Orden. He has made headlines in a number of ways, and the race in 2022 was so close. A lot of Democrats around here in Western Wisconsin think that if Brad Paff had gotten more support from the Democratic Party, then he might have been able to win the election. And I've talked to Paff's campaign, people involved in his campaign, and they say that, you know, if they had another 2 weeks even of campaigning, they think he might have been able to win. So for those reasons, Democrats are interested, intensely interested in this race, but it has been a highly competitive primary this time around among the three candidates, but especially between Shankland and Cook.
Yeah, I think, just thinking back on the history of this district too, it was represented by a Democrat for a really long time. Democrat Ron Kind retired at the end of his term that ended in 2022, and kind of opened the door for that district to be flipped. It was a district that was won by Donald Trump in the 2020 election. And so I think the logic dictated that once Kind were to step down, it would be a pretty likely flip opportunity for Republicans, and that's just what happened. But like you mentioned, the financial differences for that race, for the fundraising that went into it, national Democrats didn't really invest in Brad Paff's campaign. And I think that was a real disappointment. That race was a lot closer than many people expected it to be. If there was more spending from the National Democrats, would that have made the difference? Hard, impossible to say, of course, but certainly stands to reason that it could a close race could have been even closer and could have even, gone in the Democrats' favor. Now, I think there have been a couple of reports in recent weeks suggesting that the House Democrats' Political Action Committee is lining up to do some real spending in this race. I think the Politico report from last week or the week before said it was around $4 million that they were reserving for the winner of this primary in this race, and so they're going to try and win this one back. And I think of the eight congressional districts in the state of Wisconsin, this is probably the most likely to be flipped. Probably will be the most closely contested. I think that the first congressional district is going to be another one that Democrats are going to be spending on, with Peter Barca being a pretty strong name recognition candidate in that one. But with the fact that this one has, a primary with two, what I would characterize as pretty strong candidates in the race, because I think Shankland and Cook have both demonstrated some ability to compete in this type of race. I think Cook did better than many expected in the primary 2 years ago. I think she had more than a third of the votes that year. And then Shankland, she is someone that, as longtime Recombobulation Era readers know, I preview every race on the ballot in the Wisconsin state legislature. Republicans have gone after Shankland in the last couple election cycles. And not only has she won, she has expanded the margin of victory by which she's won by. When she won in 2022 by a double-digit margin, I kind of had her name circled as a potential congressional candidate. The fact that she's outrunning at the top of the ticket in her district. Cook, again, a strong showing in the 2022 primary. Both interesting backgrounds, both would make quite an interesting contrast with the more bombastic far right Van Orden than the two women running in this race. So what's your larger impression, of the Cook campaign, of the Shankland campaign, and how these races have been run thus far?
Yeah, Dan. So if we look at the Cook campaign and the Shankland campaign, I'm not detecting a lot of difference between them. I'm not seeing a lot of daylight between them on policy and ideology. And as much as you and I would love to focus on policy, if there's just not a difference between the two candidates, then we need to look elsewhere for the distinctions that they might bring to the table. And you hit on a very important one for Shankland. She touts her ability to run in a tough district and win in a tough district. And that is a pretty direct appeal to the Democratic Party's desire among many Democratic activists to have someone who is electable. I mean, many people obviously would prioritize that as a criteria for a potential candidate to go up against Derek Van Orden. But Rebecca Cook has presented a different theory of electability because she has made some not so subtle references to Shankland as a career politician. And indeed, Shankland has been in office for several terms in the state assembly. Cook portrays herself as a political outsider on social media. She frequently touts the fact that she is waiting tables part-time while running for Congress. She talks about her family farm in campaign commercials. So it's very interesting to watch this internal dialogue, this internal conversation within the Democratic Party about what it means to be electable in the context of this Western Wisconsin district, and in the context of what could be an uphill battle taking on Derek Van Orden in the fall. Now, political prognosticators will disagree about how much of an uphill battle it will be for Democrats to take on Van Orden. It's going to be at least somewhat of an uphill battle, but you mentioned the super PAC that's supporting House Democrats. They have talked about putting several million dollars into this campaign, and that could make a big difference. So an uphill battle, but not clear how much of an uphill battle it would be for Democrats to go against Van Orden, and different arguments among Shanklin and Cook about why they are the most electable candidate.
Yeah, that electability question is always an interesting one because it doesn't have, you know, a clearly defined answer. You don't know who's electable until the election, right? And so I think that, you know, that's certainly an interesting piece of this, and it's always, you know, within a primary, it's an interesting argument to make. I feel like we talked about that so much during the 2020 Democratic presidential primary. Who's the most electable versus Trump? You know, maybe this is a different scale, you know, version of that with Van Orden being pretty Trumpy himself, you know, trying to stop him as much as, you know, kind of advance, you know, some kind of agenda, because like you said, these are both Democrats, you know, they're both Western Wisconsin Democrats and align in a lot of ways. But I think there has been, you know, at least some interesting differences, you know, kind of when it comes down to the endorsements, some of the things like that. You know, one of the groups that has been talked about as a, you know, kind of, I don't know if you would necessarily call it controversial, but in some circles controversial, the Blue Dog pack that has backed Rebecca Cook in this race, you know, that has gotten some pushback from some other Shanklin backers, notably Congressman Mark Pocan of the 2nd Congressional District. He's been pretty vocal about his criticism of the Blue Dogs and their involvement in this race. What's happening here with that particular endorsement?
Yeah, the endorsements are another distinction between these two candidates. Again, if we're not really looking so much at ideology and policy, we can look at their backgrounds, we can look at their theory of what makes for an electable candidate, and we can also look at endorsements. And Shanklin has racked up a lot of endorsements from different groups out there that are affiliated with the Democratic Party, but also key elected officials. Like right here in the La Crosse area, there are multiple elected officials who have endorsed Shanklin. And you mentioned Mark Pocan, also Gwen Moore. So the two U.S. House representatives on the Democratic Party side from Wisconsin. And that only scratches the surface of Shanklin's endorsements. So it'll be very interesting to see how much power endorsements have in a Democratic primary. On the other hand, Cook doesn't have the endorsements from elected officials so much as she has endorsements from various groups. You mentioned the Blue Dogs. And that has been the topic of some conversation, because to some in the Democratic Party, the word Blue Dog is a turnoff. It may represent someone who is more conservative or more moderate than the party might want. On the other hand, Cook portrays that as evidence of her electability, saying, hey, I'm kind of a moderate branded candidate who can win swing voters, who can win some of those split ticket voters. I mean, the proof is going to come on election day, but I think we're seeing interesting dynamics in this campaign when it comes to endorsements, and we'll get a sense of how much these endorsements mattered when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you look at Shanklin in particular, she has got a ton of endorsements from labor, a lot of union endorsements. You've got the Wisconsin Education Association Council. You've got IBEW, Iron Workers, you know, AFSCME, like she, AFL-CIO. You can go through the list of, she has really a lot of labor endorsements. Cook also has the endorsement of SEIU, the Service Industry Union as well. So it's some interesting choices there with the endorsements in this race. You know, I think the union endorsements, I think, are pretty important because, you know, that's an organization that's going to show up at the polls, that will encourage their people to be there and vote on August 13th. There's another factor in this race that I think is interesting, and interesting based on geography and where, and I think you are right at the center of it in lacrosse, because you have Katrina Shankland, who has represented Stevens Point for more than a decade in the state legislature. And you also have Rebecca Cook, who is from Eau Claire and has deep roots there. That kind of makes lacrosse a bit of a battleground in this race. So tell me about that dynamic and how these campaigns are trying to, reach your neighbors in lacrosse.
Yeah, Dan, if we go back to the 2022 primary and we look at the contest between Brad Pfaff and Rebecca Cook, who ended up being the top two finishers that year, they did very well in their respective geographic bases. Cook did quite well in the northern parts of this district, the Eau Claire area, and the surrounding areas. Meanwhile, Brad Pfaff, who represents a state Senate district in the La Crosse area, in La Crosse County and the surrounding counties, he did extremely well in the territory covered by his state Senate district. And that was enough to get him over the finish line, even though, as you mentioned, Cook finished a rather impressive second place. I think she certainly exceeded my expectations and exceeded the expectations of others. So that leaves open the question, who might do well in the lacrosse area? And I think all of the candidates realize that lacrosse is potentially a battleground because I think it's widely expected that Cook would do well again in Eau Claire. It's widely expected that Shanklin would do well in Stevens Point. Those are the voters they've already cultivated. Those are the support areas that they've already gained in the past. So lacrosse becomes that battleground. And we have seen the candidates show up here repeatedly. We've seen Shanklin make multiple campaign stops. We've seen Cook make multiple campaign stops. We've seen the paid media as well. And I think the paid media is really important in such a large and sprawling district like this one is. So Shankland has been on the air for several weeks. She was the first one, to my knowledge, on the air on paid broadcast media. And Cook got on the air with her own media buys shortly thereafter. And we have seen the different brands come into play in the paid media. We have seen Shanklin talk about her experience as a legislator. She touts her bipartisanship in the state assembly, while Cook has focused on her family farm and the issue of abortion in her paid media. So I think paid media could be quite important when we're sorting out how lacrosse is going to go in this primary election.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So, like, when you get a you watch a YouTube video or something like that, are you getting Shankland and Cook ads all the time, in and around lacrosse these days?
Oh, yeah, people are getting inundated with digital advertisements from Shanklin and Cook. And if you watch the evening news out here in La Crosse or Eau Claire, you may see multiple ads from these candidates. So Shanklin and Cook do have the resources to be on the air in July into early August. Wilson, as we noted, has the least amount of financial resources out of the field. So he has not, to my knowledge, made any paid broadcast media buys. He may have some digital buys that I'm not aware of. But Shanklin and Cook are definitely spending their campaign war chest in order to reach the voters here. And so I think the La Crosse area may be swayed by who was most effective at getting their message out. Is it Shankland who sells the idea that an experienced legislator who has bipartisan credentials is the best fit for this district, is the best fit for Democrats who want to defeat Van Orden? Or is it Rebecca Cook who talks about her family farm and talks about abortion, which of course is an issue that Democrats feel they can gain an advantage on in this election?
Yeah, how do you feel like these messages are playing in lacrosse? Do you think either candidate, has an edge in this area? Because this is, lacrosse is a swing area for this district, but it's a swing area for the state. And so that's, it's a place where you get, I imagine you are inundated with quite a lot of political messaging in an election year like this one. How do you feel like these messages are playing in your community?
Oh, absolutely, Dan. I mean, we saw targeted messages to this region about, like, from the Evers campaign, from the Baldwin campaign. And so if we go back to previous election cycles, Tony Evers won this district and Tammy Baldwin has won this district in the past. So although the third district has trended red in certain respects, I mean, most obviously Ron Kind being the longtime moderate Democrat representing the area and then him bowing out of office and getting replaced by Van Orden in 2022, it doesn't mean that the district has shifted that far to the right. And I think, Dan, if we look ahead to November, I think it's pretty likely that Tammy Baldwin would win this congressional district. And then the question for these candidates is if they can generate that type of, you know, if Tammy Baldwin or Kamala Harris has that type of down ballot pull for these candidates. But as you mentioned, La Crosse is likely to be a very important part of this election for a couple of reasons. First of all, in La Crosse and in Eau Claire and in the areas in between and in the areas around, there are a lot of swing voters, a lot of people who aren't that tied to either party. Maybe a lot of people who voted Obama and voted for Trump and are kind of not sure where they stand politically.
Those famous Obama-Trump voters going back there.
Yeah. The pivot counties, the famed pivot counties that voted for Obama and then voted for Trump, they are disproportionately in Western Wisconsin, meaning that this area, in my view, is not solidly in either camp. The trend lines are what they are, but I don't see strong evidence that either party can take a lot of comfort in how things are going in Western Wisconsin. I think they've got to work very hard, both sides. And so for these candidates, the question is, like, can they win over these swing voters? But also, the third district has a ton of college students. It has multiple UW campuses. It has other campuses right here in La Crosse. Like, I am currently on the campus of the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse. If I took a drive 10 minutes from here, I'd be at Viterbo University. I could go south and be at UW-Platteville, could go north and be at UW-Eau Claire, could go to Shanklin's district and be in UW-Stevens Point. At least I think that's kind of where her district is. So a lot of UW students. And my goodness, did we see how those students have been mobilized in the past, most notably in the 2023 State Supreme Court election. It knocked me out. It knocked my socks off, like, how students were interested in an odd numbered year April election. I never thought I'd see that. So students can be a political force. Young people can be a political force in this district. We just don't know if that's going to happen. But with the election of Protase, which we saw what happens when students are mobilized.
Yeah, and we saw that. And I think, you know, you're talking about the swinginess of this district. I think Protase won by double digits in the third congressional district, or maybe close to it. So certainly liberal candidates can win there. And I think you're right. I think there's probably some Obama, Trump, Baldwin, Johnson, Evers, Van Orden,
yep,
you know, type of voters out there, that I think there is this real independent streak. You know, I see it in the fight, you know, as a UW Oshkosh grad, I see a lot of similarities between the Fox Valley and Western Wisconsin in terms of that independent streak and how they can, you know, back members of both parties. And it's not necessarily like this is solidly red or solidly blue. You know, any election can produce any kind of result here, which is part of what I think makes it such an interesting race. But this one has gotten a little spicy, especially between Cook and Shanklin. As we get close to the finish line here, there's been some stuff over debates. There's been some stuff over the ads. I feel like there's, under the surface, there's maybe, you know, kind of some growing amount of bad blood in this primary too. What's your sense of what's happening, and what have you felt like has been some of the more, you know, interesting, spicier moments in the conversation here around this campaign?
Yeah, I can give you a few examples, Dan. First of all, Shanklin went negative against Cook, not all out negative, but there was an ad where she had an image on the screen of Rebecca Cook saying, "Never held office." I mean, that is Shanklin going all in on the idea of experience and that voters will respond to her years in office favorably. And Shanklin's brand is also the legislation that she's been part of. And she noted that Cook has never been involved in like passing a law, at least not as a member of an elected body. Then there's an outside group that enters the picture and has a negative buy against Shanklin, saying things to the effect of like Shanklin's going negative, and that's because she has this questionable record on Badger Care and all these other things. And then you have Shanklin's endorsers come into the picture and say, no, she was actually very strong on Medicaid expansion. And Governor Evers' spokeswoman comes into the picture and says, hey, she worked really hard with the governor to try to get Medicaid expansion to happen. So there's been this back and forth between Shanklin and Cook, but it's spilled out into the Democratic Party more generally. The elected members of the state legislature and other folks who have supported Shanklin, including folks from the governor's office. And then, as you noted, like Mark Pocan has been a very vocal supporter of Shanklin and has increasingly become critical of Rebecca Cook. Now, those ads against Shanklin are indeed, by an outside group. It doesn't say, like, I'm Rebecca Cook and I approve this message. It doesn't say that. But there is a website, a page on Rebecca Cook's website that points people to some talking points. And I mean, we know what that means. Like, we know what a web page like that means. Like, candidates do that all the time. They say, well, I'm not going to coordinate with a super PAC, but if a super PAC was interested in some ideas, here they are. And I'm being lighthearted about this, but it's nothing that Cook is doing that's like crazy or weird or unusual. This type of thing happens all the time nowadays in the era of independent expenditures, in the era of super PACs. It's very common, but the issue of money in the campaign has become an issue, and the tone of the campaign has become an issue. And you mentioned debates. I was part of an effort trying to organize a televised debate between these candidates. And we tried for 6 weeks to organize the darn thing. And we just were not able to do it, which was a big surprise for us and a disappointment because it was no sweat to put this debate together among the Democratic candidates for this district 2 years ago. And also, Derek Van Orden declined our debate invitation prior to the 2022 election, and Democrats were very critical of that. Now, in fairness to the Democrats in the field this time around, they have had a number of forums among the candidates, I believe four in the different parts of the district. At the same time, we did offer them an opportunity to be on multiple TV stations and multiple radio stations, and we weren't able to do that. For context, I think it is important to note that Shanklin agreed to every opportunity that we provided. Shanklin agreed to every possible date and time slot. And it was just a matter of trying to get Wilson and Cook on the same page, trying to get them in a situation where they were interested in debating, and we just couldn't make it work. So that was a real disappointment, but it's indicative of a broader tone of this campaign, which is far more contentious than the Democratic primary was in this district 2 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, regardless of who wins this primary, they're going to need everybody on board to defeat Van Orden, who I imagine is there. The Republicans are going to be spending a lot in favor of him in this race as well. So do you think this type of this bad blood or whatever that has grown during this campaign will spill over into the general election? Do you think that could be a problem?
I think competitive and contentious primaries can have three potential damaging effects. The first is strained feelings, hard feelings. The second is draining financial resources for the primary that could have been used in the general. And the third is how competitive and contentious primaries can result in a race for candidates to take more extreme and more ideological positions. I haven't seen the third scenario play out yet. I have not seen these candidates take more ideological or more quote unquote extreme positions in light of the competition. So I think Democrats can feel good about that to the extent that, going more towards the middle might mean more electability. The financial resources aspect of it is interesting because, as I noted, Cook and Shanklin do seem to be making major media buys, and they do have different levels of financial resources that they can draw from. In terms of the strained feelings, I think the jury's still out on that, but typically parties come together. And I think in this case, Democrats will be highly motivated, not necessarily perhaps by who their nominee is, but by the by who their opponent is. So I don't think the strained feelings are going to be that much of a problem, but I am watching the financial resources piece because Derek Van Orden had a huge war chest. And we know from last time that Republican groups spent on his behalf in 2022, while Democrats did not really spend on Brad Paff's behalf. So we might see Republican outside groups enter the picture. We know that Van Orden is a very good fundraiser, has a lot of money stored away. So the financial piece to me is what I'm watching.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think, in terms of just the raw numbers from the fundraising, I think Cook has had an edge over Shankland overall in the fundraising. But, like you said, they're both going to have to spend to make it through this primary, and what that, what those resources look like on August 14th for the winner of this primary is going to be interesting. So as we start to wrap up here, you look ahead to next week. Do you have any predictions for how this race might go?
I think my prediction is that we're going to see some predictable geographic patterns that we've talked about, Dan. I think Shanklin is going to do very well in the Stevens Point area. I think Cook is going to do very well in the Eau Claire area. And that leaves two questions: who wins La Crosse? And where does Eric Wilson pull votes from? Because if this were a head-to-head race, it'd be a different conversation than what we have, which is a three-person race. Like, could Wilson be kind of a spoiler here? I mean, maybe we have some scenario where it's Shankland is in the four is in the 30s or 40s, Cook is in the 30s or 40s, and then Wilson is not in the lead, but is still getting a decent chunk of the vote. So I don't know who's gonna win. I don't have any firm predictions on that, but I can tell you a couple things I'm going to be watching: the La Crosse area and the role of Eric Wilson in potentially influencing who comes out on top.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to watch. I don't I feel like just on balance, it seems like it could go either way. But like you said, the Wilson factor is interesting because like you said, I don't know who he would be pulling votes from. Because I don't think either of the candidates in this race are trying to carve out that kind of progressive path to win this race. Cook with having endorsed, I think Cook's campaign 2 years ago may have looked a little bit more like that, but not to the extent where it would be a, Bernie Sanders type of campaign or anything like that. And the fact that she has the endorsement from Blue Dogs, pulls her overall kind of more towards a moderate type of path. And Shankland has talk repeatedly about bipartisanship in her race. And so it's not like she's, carving out this ideologue path in her race either. So yeah, that is very interesting to see what happens. And on August 13th, I think this will be when I'm pulling up the statewide results for a lot of these races. I will of course be looking at the constitutional amendments. We've looked at that a lot at the Recombobulation Area in recent weeks, but I think the second thing I'll be looking at are the results of the third congressional district primary to see where La Crosse goes. As goes La Crosse, so goes the third district congressional primary, perhaps here. So
I'm stealing that one.
there you go. There you go. All right. Well, Anthony, thank you so much for joining us here at the Recombobulation Area. Lots of great insight on this race. And I think this district in your area is going to be in focus a little bit over these next 3 months here. So we'll have to talk to you again as things go forward.
Thanks, Dan. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Thanks a lot. Be well. And thanks to all of you for listening to the Recombobulation Area podcast. We'll see you next time.